Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, this particular episode of Word in Your Ear is supported by NordVPN.
And I have to ask at this stage, Dave, what is VPN? Explain that to me.
VPN stands for, as any fool know, Mark, Virtual Private Network. Virtual Private Network, which means anybody minded to snoop on you can't see your IP address or where in the world you are. So, you know, there are many good reasons for investing in NordVPN, most of them to do with just keeping your data safe from those with malign intent, either at home or abroad. And you might say never more than now. Yeah, it's particularly useful if you're in the habit of going online in spaces where you're in public Wi-Fi, for instance. Yeah. Let's say, just imagine, Mark, just imagine you're a John Lennon impersonator online in an internet cafe in, say, what, the British Virgin Islands?
Let's say somewhere in the Caribbean.
Do
we know someone like this? I think we do.
So let's say you were doing that, but it could happen. So that's the time, for instance, where you need to be extra careful of your security. And at the same time, you've got the additional reassurance, you know, if you're online anywhere in the world, of knowing your traffic is encrypted. So, Mark, if you're actually watching old clips of Pete Brown's Battered Ornaments, for instance,
have you got me under surveillance? This is extraordinary.
Nobody need know at all. So that's the serious reasons. Those are serious reasons for looking into NordVPN. But there's also fun stuff, Mark. And you want to know about the fun stuff,
don't you? We all do. Come on.
One of the things about it is it allows you to choose to access the internet from one of, I think, more than 50 different countries. So, do I feel like going online from Vietnam or the Netherlands today, from the United States or from Australia? This means also, you probably do this, take your laptop on holiday overseas with you, you'll still be able to access UK news and UK programming without any difficulty. And furthermore,
you can watch what they're watching out there too.
You could do that. Because if you're one of those people like me who spent hours scrolling through kind of streaming services and still thinking there's nothing you want to watch, you will, like me, take delight, Mark, in finding out what they like to watch in Japan or Mexico and watching it
too. I love
too.
This stuff.
So sometimes it's the same stuff as we watch over here, because I can tell you that Netflix viewers in Turkey can watch the IT Crowd, which just makes me laugh to think about it.
Seems extraordinary. You think they'd be lost in translation, but no, evidently not.
And also, the most popular comedy in South Korea at the moment is, of course, I shouldn't be surprised in this at all, the Seth Rogen film The Interview, which is all about North Korea, and which caused, great umbrage being taken on in that quarter. But sometimes it's different, and that's because all films are supposed to be region restricted for reasons that make a lot of sense to the companies that control them, but probably don't make a lot of sense to us. So with NordVPN, Mark, you can shake off these shackles. And it's thanks to this. I went looking. This is just for instance on Netflix Sweden. And I passed quickly past the section labeled Nordic comedies because forgive me, that just seems like a contradiction in terms. But what I found, this is what I found at Netflix Sweden. I found a whole cache of glorious old British black and white films.
This is a sort of talking pictures type thing.
Yes, absolutely. So,
Sort of things?
Here I found, Mark, you've got to remember and love this film, Two Way Stretch.
Oh, Two Way Stretch?
The Peter Don Sellers.
Jelly Knight. It's the Lenny the Dip. It's the three prisoners who break out of jail, don't they? And on a heist and then break back into jail so they have the perfect alibi.
It's
what a genius script.
Peter Sellers and Wilfred Hyde-White.
Bernard Cribbins.
Absolutely. Wilfred Hyde-White playing Soapy Stevens.
That's right.
There's absolutely a glorious thing.
Lionel Jeffries is the chief prison officer, Sauerkraut. You remember him?
God, I love that film. It's a masterpiece. There's other things which I haven't watched yet, but I know The Family Way is on there.
Be Still My Beating Heart.
Was it Hayley Mills and Wilfred Pickles?
And music by McCartney.
By Paul
McCartney.
When
still a member of the Beatles. I can't remember when it came out, in the late 60s.
The mid-60s, I think. And also, gloriously, a film that everybody should watch every week is Went the Day Well, which is the kind of propaganda film.
About paratroopers. German paratroopers take a village, don't they?
An English village.
English village, that's right, yeah.
And yet you see the glorious sight of Thora Hurd with a machine gun. So it's all kinds of things like that. Brighton Rock. I just thought to myself, I can't believe Death at Broadcasting House is available on Netflix and Netflix
Good God,
Sweden.
That's obscure.
But I can't get it in the
UK. You can't get it here. That's right.
So, it's early days. But already I'm taken with the riches I've found. So, there'll be more next week. I'll be talking about this more next week. Meanwhile, you can take advantage of a deal where you can try NordVPN by going to nordvpn.com/yourear. Your ear, that's right. Or just use the code Your Ear to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan. And one additional month for free and also a bonus gift. I don't know what it is, but it's a bonus gift. So it's risk-free.
Probably worth having.
Because there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. And fuller details are in the show notes below.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
In a departure from normal form, I thought we'd start with any of the business. So we're joined by Alex Gold, who's once again in Miami, Florida, on a turning ocean liner in port at the moment. Is that right, Alex?
We're in port. I got woken up at 5:15. When the ship turns, it judders. And the juddering woke me up this morning at 5:15 a.m., which was fine because I had to be up to record it.
It's so hard to feel sympathetic, Dave, isn't it, for somebody on an ocean liner.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm having a terrible time. Hashtag first world problems. Yeah, I was woken up by juddering at 5:15.
Well, look, you probably want something to think about early in the morning. And so here is the topic that has been raging on the internet for the last couple of days, ever since I read in a proof of Nick Durden's book. What's the book called, Mark? I've forgotten.
It's called Exit Stage Left. Yeah, Exit we both Stage got a copy of it. It's very good. We're going to talk to him soon, actually. It's very, very good.
The afterlife of pop stars. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Okay. And I were alighted on this line, which really struck me. It said that Dave Balfe had signed Blur because three of them are good-looking. No mention of the fourth,
It's so cruel, but it's true. This is real
life.
You
know who you are.
I know.
And it got me wondering, you know, about that whole notion of good looks in bands and how many good-looking members you can have in a band. And also, this morning, I just happened to be watching an old episode of Seinfeld where Jerry says, what percentage of people are good-looking? And Elaine says, what, 25%? He says, are you kidding? It's more like 6%, as if he's worked it out. You know,
yeah, I know.
I think that's the argument, really. You know what I mean? Because, you know, which bands have all members good looking? And you know, people nominate all kinds of people. You know, well, you know, a lot of people talk about Blondie, Mark. You know, where I mean, are Blondie all good looking?
No. See, I it's very difficult to talk about this because it's subjective and also it becomes quite personal. But
yeah,
you know, I think my definition of this is that you're talking about people who are independently handsome or gorgeous or whatever outside of the context of the group. Now, to take a really obvious example, you know, Ringo Starr looks fantastic on the cover of Rubber Soul. There's no way around that. But Ringo Starr, outside the context of the Beatles, would not be someone who would turn heads when walking down Regent Street. Whereas the other three would, you know.
Ringo Starr is not someone you'd want to see in their underwear on the cover of GQ.
No, right. I mean, you could argue that the Hamburg Beatles were five exceptionally fabulous-looking people. But the Beatles themselves, possibly less so. I mean, it's to do with your gorgeousness being the fact, and I think this is true of Blondie, is the fact that they were part of a group called Blondie who had a kind of group image, and that made them seem more fabulous.
There's a halo, isn't there?
There is.
Once you've decided a group is kind of glamorous, you overlook the shortcomings of individual members. You see, I'd go further. I'd go back with the Beatles. I don't think John Lennon is all that startling looking at all. John Lennon wouldn't have been stopped by a model agent in the street in London and said, you know, here's my card. Paul McCartney would have done.
Yes,
you know
he would have been.
George Harrison possibly might have done. John Lennon, not at all. But, you know, within there's a halo effect of a group like the Beatles. You know, the classic case of this, we were talking about this yesterday, the birds.
I know, because the birds, it's the rhythm section. It's Michael Clarke and
Chris Hillman.
And Hillman, who are the really fabulous-looking members of that group. The other three are actually slightly kind of ginky, particularly Crosby.
Roger McGuinn is weird-looking.
Yeah.
Absolutely strange-looking. He kind of made an issue of it, you know, with the little square specs and the kind of bit Dickensian face he had. You know,
whereas the
Beach Boys were at the back, you know, playing drums and bass, you know. Go on, Alex.
Oh, you were saying the other day, weren't you, though, there's a difference between rock star handsome and a film star handsome. And they're based on different properties, aren't they? So film star handsome, I think, is all about symmetry and, you know, conventional attractiveness, but kind of ramped up to 11. And rock star handsome is all about, it's all about a quirk and sort of amplifying that quirk to make it a virtue.
I think it is. I think, you know, very often the very good looking rock stars are actually a bit strange.
They're a bit out of proportion. I mean, it's the classic thing about Mick Jagger and Debbie Harry.
Springsteen.
Because their heads seem to be too big. And Springsteen, yes. they're quite small and they're kind of, they're strangely put together, but they have an immense charisma.
Immense charisma, which is also as a result of their success. You know, I think it's very difficult to be really handsome member of a group who've been around for ages and haven't done very well. Because I think success is what makes people really attractive, you know. If you've been kind of kicking around forever, you sort of can't be, really. You're not allowed to be.
Well, success and relativity, because, I mean, if you imagine like the Rolling Stones as like a cheese board, for example, you know, like Keith Richards is kind of a bit of a dodgy Stilton and Charlie Watts is a nutty Gouda. On their own, they're just sort of like blocks of cheese, but all together, they look like, you know, quite a nice thing to spend some time ingesting.
Yeah. So
we've had
some suggestions from people out there. John McKee was not the only one to say the Strokes.
The Strokes is a very good. Also, some of the Strokes, they're very glamorous. There's a kind of gangster thing about them. Their names, too, Fabrizio Moretti, Nick Valenci, Julian Casablancas. There's something kind of fabulous about the whole concept.
Don't they also, Alex? Now, you're our Strokes correspondent. I'm by no means an expert on the Strokes. Do they not all come from kind of quite wealthy, sophisticated Manhattan backgrounds. And I think one of their fathers ran a model agency.
Julian Casablancas's, yeah. Okay. At least three of them went to a prof school in Switzerland. And
they did.
And if they, this is terrible reflection on the way the world is, if they ran model agencies very successfully, they probably married models. There's probably been a certain amount of breeding involved in this process, you know, over a period of time. Not that there's anything wrong with that at all, because actually the Orton Cobbler, whoever the Orton Cobbler is, a mystery correspondent, suggests somebody that we didn't think about ourselves, but I think it's worthy of consideration, which is the small faces. The small faces were good looking.
Yeah, I think all four of them were.
They were.
You know,
unusually, there was a brief window of time.
And they look
the most good looking band on the planet, I think.
Yeah, and they look so gorgeous together. You know, their symmetry is fantastic.
Because it's a combination. They were good looking and they had a look. Didn't they? You know, it was the combination of the two together. If you looked at them individually, they were good looking. But they really had a look. And if you look at, actually, if you want to see the acme, we've often mentioned this, the acme of pop star looks, go on YouTube after you've watched this and look up Small Faces and P.P. Arnold doing Tin Soldier.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
1967
or whatever. There's five most gorgeous human beings on God's earth.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's beautiful. Absurd.
Yeah.
It is. I tell you another I thought of that I think Stuart Penny mentioned, which I'd not thought of, actually. They are a band. I mean, they did play instrument stuff. The Walker Brothers. You look at the Walkers, my Lord, do you think they count? I can see you frowning, Dave.
I'm only going to frown because I think they've also... listen, Scott Walker, fabulously handsome. John Walker, fabulously handsome. Yeah. Gary Leeds, not fabulously handsome. Gary Leeds, a drummer.
I differ.
Do you think?
Yeah, I thought they were all three of them stunning.
Oh, right, okay, all right. You're more forgiving than
I am. Various others, there's the... there's the Stone Roses. Somebody mentioned Stone Roses. I've always thought the early Stone Roses were phenomenal looking. Absolutely. The days when Manny was still outrageous looking. And they're a possibility.
Damien Johnston, Alex, suggests Ride.
I don't know enough about Ride, really. I know Andy Bell, of course. I don't think Andy Bell was ever really that... I think Andy Bell was indie good looking. I don't think he was...
Oh, is indie good looking?
Indie different? Indie that good just looking. Means thin, does it? Thin with interesting hair.
Yeah, it's thin with interesting hair, sort of slightly gangly, you know, slightly distorted features, I suppose. Not conventionally underpant handsome, but.
All right, you know, underpant handsome.
Guitar handsome. Paul H mentions the Bangles, and I think Susanna Hoffs is still absolutely drop dead gorgeous, actually. I'd go for the Bangles.
Bangles are a good one. Suede. Yeah. Somebody mentioned Suede.
Suede.
That's a possibility. again, very indie. It's about skinniness, isn't it? And blousy shirts.
More than one person has mentioned Japan. David Sylvian.
Again, one doesn't want to get personal, but there was a member of Japan who stood at the back in the pictures with very frizzy hair. And probably a drummer. No, it wasn't a drummer. That was David Silver's brother, wasn't it? I don't think he fits the bill, but I may be wrong. They did look rather fabulous. It's true. Being unkind here.
Tracy says INXS. And I had a look at INXS this morning. They're all very acceptably, you know, presentable young men. But Michael Hutchins is weirdly good looking.
Different.
Although Michael Hutchins, I never met him. But weirdly photogenic, really photogenic. But whether that means the same thing as handsome, I'm not quite clear. You know, and again, you go back to your film star thing. Film stars, they're photographed moving, aren't they? And so huge part of their appeal to us is just how they move.
Yeah.
How they do simple things.
And how they speak as well. Yeah.
Watching, you know. Go on.
I was going to say Michael Hutchins. I think a lot of that's to do with just pure animal magnetism and sex appeal, isn't it? Which you know, both sexes can immediately appreciate. And he's like Jim Morrison. He's got something absolutely supernatural.
Amazing. John Garrettly suggests the Monkees, but the Monkees were kind of put together to be on telly, weren't they? So they were.
Would he ever have got stopped in the street by?
I don't think so. Mickey Dolenz was a child star, wasn't he? Mickey Dolenz was very pretty.
Yeah, he was.
And Dave Jones was as well, you know. But I don't think. You know, because there's the thing about a band, they should be, ideally, you know, this may be an ancient romantic notion, that you should be a load of blokes who met each other when they were teenagers or whatever, and then just ended up being yoked together through eternity. And so, you know, when you look at them, can you honestly say that they're all good looking, or is it just together they make a kind of picture? That's the challenge, really.
Sarah Kay says the Police. I think she's right. I'm sorry.
No, fair.
I think the Police were unbelievable. Obviously, Sting phenomenal, but the other two are really fabulous looking in the early days.
I'm going to ask you a challenging question. The Police, Mark Allen.
Cool.
Take away the blondness. Are they that startling?
Well, that was a lot of it, wasn't it? They were in an ad.
It was a huge amount of it.
So it did make them look like three versions of the same thing.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
See that scene?
They were like a kind of. It was like the Beatles with eight arms to hold you and all that.
Hydra-headed, aren't they?
Yeah, it's
a really good body. So the Rolling Stones, the same thing.
The classic
line of the Rolling Stones: five versions, one person.
Exactly.
The Ramones: four versions of one person.
Yeah,
the Strokes as well, actually.
The Strokes: five versions of one person.
Japan.
Are we onto something?
Here? We are. That's true.
We're onto something here. This is groups, isn't it?
It doesn't
apply with individuals. Oh, well, we're not talking about individuals here at all. So there's John McKay also suggests maybe Joy Division before Hookie filled out, which is not very kind. Were Joy Division ever good looking? Would you have ever thought in that way?
Again, it's just a look, isn't it? It's a different thing. They had a kind of, they had a signature about them, didn't they? They had an aesthetic. But I don't think you could individually say that there was anyone particularly so. Ian Curtis was pretty amazing looking, actually. But I don't know. I think we'll discount that one.
I think the acid test is if Bernard Sumner works in a bank, you wouldn't think he was drop dead gorgeous. Would he have been molested
at the Christmas party?
You wouldn't think I'm going to go to his window. Jonathan Richmond is reminded. We always talk about Jonathan Richmond. Jonathan Richman, not Richmond, what am I talking about? He wrote a song called The New Teller. Do you remember that? Very early on. I'm in love with The New Teller. I've got to go listen to that again. Yeah. And that was all about... It's a very old world idea. I'm going to get in the queue to have my check cashed by the new teller. It's got to be somebody I find attractive.
Yeah.
Anyway, further nominations. We want to hear them.
The Word Podcast. Prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
So another week, another court case involving my learned friends, no doubt doing very well out of, you know, pop stars being sued over allegedly plagiarizing somebody's song.
In this case, it was Ed Sheeran, wasn't it? People are always pursuing the people who made the most money because that's where the pot of gold is.
You see, this is one of the things I was going to say about it. You know, where there's a hit, there's a writ.
Yeah.
Nobody goes after anybody who hasn't got a hit, you know, because there's no point at all.
There's no catch.
Because think about this, Mark. What were we saying the other week? What was that extraordinary stat about how many tunes are uploaded to Spotify?
Oh, was it 60,000 a day? Was it something like that? I think it's every day, 60,000 tunes.
60,000 tunes are uploaded to Spotify every day, and a large number of those are pop songs, right? So they're written, you know, using the same three chords and you know, quite similar instrumentation, and they're kind of, you know, the lyrical content is similarly, you know, it's uniform, isn't it?
In
many senses. So it's impossible that they're not all constantly borrowing things from each other. It doesn't make any sense at all to suggest that it's exceptional. You know, it's all just made in the same way, isn't it? You know,
it completely and it's absolutely impossible, really, to find any series of a short sequence of chords that hasn't been used before. And if you're going to use that, you're likely to be influenced by the melody that came with it. You know, it's just, you can't avoid it, can you?
I don't think so.
I'll give you an example. Someone had told me the other day that I should listen to Nat King Cole's "Answer Me, My Love."
All right.
Came out in 1953. When McCartney wrote "Yesterday," he always said, "I kind of always felt I must have heard this song before, and I asked around, and maybe it was something that my father used to play, who loved those old ballads, you know." And he eventually decided that he hadn't, and it was original, and everyone said, "Don't worry, go with it." But if you listen to "Answer Me, My Love," which I did this morning, actually, you know, "You were mine yesterday. I believed that love was here to stay. Won't you tell me where I've gone astray?" And those are the lyrics. The actual lilt of it, the emphasis on the words, the syncopation of it, is really uncanny. This was written in 1953, 12 years before "Yesterday" came out. So there's a really good example. It's quite possible that, you know, that Lady Madonna. Lady Madonna is just "Bad Penny Blues."
Bad Penny Blues.
I mean, it just sort of is, really. And
it's made into something else, isn't it? Because the answer me yesterday thing is quite interesting, because I knew both of those records, and until you said that just now, I had never connected the two whatsoever.
Well, someone just mentioned to me, and I thought, I'll listen. It's not kind of the same tune or anything, but it has the same sensibility. Clearly, there are some very, very similar words, but it has the same sensibility, you know. And you think, well, there's an echo here.
Well, the funny thing is that, you know, the week that Ed Sheeran's going to court to defend his reputation against whoever wants a third of the publishing for some huge hit record, because that's what these things are always all about, isn't it? I happen to watch, there's a series, is it on Disney Plus, I think, or is it on Apple? No, it's on Apple, called Watch That Sound with Mark Ronson.
Mark Ronson, yeah.
And he'd done a series of films which are all about various different aspects of a contemporary record making, or I suppose post-hip-hop record making. It's very interesting in that sense, you know. So there's a program about autotune, you know, there's a program about sampling, there's a film about, the one I was watching was about drum machines. And we were only talking about this the other week when we were talking about Mike Campbell, how he wrote Boys of Summer, because, you know, they used to spend a lot of time at Leon Russell's house, and this guy called Roger Lynn kept turning up at Leon Russell's house, and he was inventing the drum machine. Anyway, Mark Ronson interviews Roger Lynn, who's a very good interviewee. He's a really, really nice guy, actually, comes over very well. And he talked about his breakthrough drum machine, which was the one where they first decided. I think it was on the advice of Steve Vaccaro, the drummer. He said, "What you should do is sample real drums, you know, rather than just trying to synthesize that sound. Actually, sample them and then make that part of your armory."
He uses his friend, is it Art Wood? He uses a particular snare sound, doesn't he?
He's got a mate, you know. He's a drummer. So he says, "All right, I'm going to set up your drum kit." Points a microphone out. He says, "Right, now hit the snare," and he just goes, "Doof." He goes, "Right, that's fine." That was it.
And so that exact sound appears on hundreds of records. Yeah,
scores of enormous hit records. You know, because and they play a load of them, and it's just absolutely astonishing. You know, so you know, he's kind of. Roger Lynn is making a virtue out of the thing that Ed Sheeran's getting sued over, you know, because one is musical and one is mechanical.
Yeah.
And it's just an interesting contrast, you know. And it's really worth watching this Mark Ronson thing, because they're dealing with the same thing all the time, which is that they like the idea that all these things shortcut musicianship.
Yeah,
you know, the sampling is, well, I don't need to play anything. I can spot breaks on things, and I can do interesting things with them, you know, or auto-tune, all those. I don't need to sing in tune because I can adjust that. And yet what they're always having to do is to then make it more human. So with every piece of technology, they turn it on and they get turned on by the efficiency of it. And then they just have to mess with it somehow.
They have to then put it through another mechanical device, don't they, to make it seem more random, because it can't be too perfect. Isn't that right?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see. You know, it's a whole process of, you know, how music is made. And as I say, in that kind of, in that post-hip-hop, in the post-hip-hop world that we live in today.
Yeah.
It's very, very much worth seeing it. And particularly to watch the interview with Roger Lynn, who's, as I say, very engaging. And if ever there was a man who changed pop music, it's Roger Lynn.
The Word Podcast. Fix yourself a drink and it's like being in the pub.
Oh, and now we go over to Brooklyn for our Patreon birthday boy, John Collins. Hello, John.
Hello, David. How are you?
We're traditionally on the occasion of people's birthdays, ask them if there's anything they'd like to put up the flagpole, or a question they'd like to ask, or something to put on the agenda. Over to you, John.
You've got something to put to us, haven't you? Come on, fire away.
I do. Well, I was speaking to good friends of mine down in Philly, Kevin Carley, about Get Back, because. I was supposed to watch it Thanksgiving. I was actually at this uncle's funeral in Liverpool. But subsequently, I've watched it four times. I've watched the whole thing four times over. I think it's one of the great musical historical documents.
It is. It's astonishing.
I remember seeing it back at, like, in the 70s or 80s, you know, when it was in its original incarnation, thinking, you know, it's a bit of a sort of miserable downer film, and it looked terrible, you know. And now I think it's a fabulous kind of, you know, legacy for their whole career, really. You know, they do all the pre-Beatles stuff. They do a lot of, you know, Love Me Do and Please Please Me. But it's fantastic seeing them bust the way through old Beatles numbers and all that sort of stuff. So I mean, we could talk about, you know, Get Back, I'm sure, for hours. But
What's your question?
Well, the question is, if you had the opportunity to be a fly on a wall at any musical historical point in time, which would it be?
God, well, briefly, I would be there for the recording of Tutti Frutti by Little Richard, because I think it's one of the most incredible stories. That moment where Dorothy Lebostry was brought in to write the lyric and did it, supposedly, in 50 minutes, and they did the three takes, that completely transformative event, I would love to have witnessed. Go on, Dave. Give us yours.
Mine's considerably less glorious, actually. My personal interest is, I think that what moves music on, what moves careers on, is very often tiny acts of what you might call betrayal. You know, the most significant moment in the Beatles' career is when they decide to get rid of Pete Best and to get Brian Epstein to do it. The most significant moment in the Rolling Stones' career is when Andrew Oldham says, no, Ian Stewart cannot be in the band because his face literally doesn't fit. Yeah. And there's a case that fascinates me, and it concerns a record that I've got here, actually, which is Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run. And you know, he'd been ages making this record. But he decided that he knew what he wanted the cover to look like. So he booked a photo session with a photographer in New Jersey. And he didn't turn up on his own, and he didn't turn up with the rest of the band. He turned up with Clarence Clemons. And he didn't tell the rest of the band.
Would you have liked to have witnessed their reaction? Is that what you're saying?
I'd like to be there. No, on the day, because that showed he had what it takes to succeed, which is absolute ruthlessness with the people closest to him, which is to say, no, it's going to look like this, and I don't care if you other guys get your nose put out of joint. This is the bigger thing. And, you know, however many years later it is, nearly 50, that is the abiding image of Bruce Springsteen. Clarence Clemons is sadly no longer with us, but that is still the abiding image of Bruce Springsteen. And I think you find cases like that in the careers of every successful group where they just did something that most people would not have the balls to do.
Absolutely.
Because they're seeing a bigger picture, you know. And in a lot of cases, it doesn't work out, but in some cases, it does. So that's mine. It's less glorious than the literature.
Very good.
Anyway, I'm sure loads of other...
You both passed.
Oh, right.
Good, thank you.
Well, no.
Pass the audition. Lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you. And have a good birthday week. Cheers. Thanks.
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
Alex, we have new patrons.
We do indeed.
Shall I pipe them aboard, Alex?
Please do, Dave. And they are.
Give us the roll of honour, come on.
Okay, Adam Berry.
Very good. Welcome aboard.
Sam Hollingsworth.
Hello, Sam.
Thank you, Sam.
You need a little puff with the bosun's whistle. Carry on.
Ray Padstow.
Good
Ray
work from
Padstow.
Ray.
Hello, Ray.
Thank you, Ray.
Tony Boydell.
Tony Boydell.
Very nice to have Tony Boydell on board.
Absolutely.
Peter Kirkham.
Excellent, Peter. Thank you. Much appreciated.
Michael Gamble.
Michael Gamble, you're among friends.
You put your coat in the bedroom.
We have two annual patrons, if you subscribe annually.
Oh,
course.
Well.
15% discount. And they are Ian H. Rowley and Matthew
Ian
Trigg.
H. Rowley.
Very good Matthew, to have them.
Nice have,
and
nice
they
have
will get a birthday visit from us to go through their record.
Oh, no, that's not a birthday patron. This is, though. Sorry.
All right, okay.
That was the annual one. Yeah.
Carl Trosclair is a birthday
very good.
Patron.
Carl, good man.
Okay, well, we'll be seeing him in due course on the occasion of his birthday, which is probably next week. We are always genuinely delighted to hear things from listeners, particularly of an informational nature, because, you know, everybody's experience is totally different. I was talking last week about there's a Bill Evans album, Live at the Village Vanguard, recorded in 1961, where you can hear the audience chattering in the background. And I was saying how I quite liked this. And Charlie Connolly got in touch to say that this actually, somebody wrote a poem about this, Mark, didn't they?
I know, I've got it here, actually. It's great. Shall I read it out? I'm pretty sure it says
that. Go on.
In the old joke, the marriage counsellor tells the couple who never talk anymore to go to a jazz club, but because this is a jazz club, everyone talks during the bass solo. But of course, no one starts talking just because of a bass solo, or any other solo for that matter. The quieter bass solo just reveals that people in the club who've been talking all along, reveals the people in the club have been talking all along, the same ones you can hear on some well-known recordings. Bill Evans, for example, who is opening a door into the piano while some guy chats up his date at one of the little tables at the back. I listened to that album so many times, I can anticipate the moment of his drunken laugh as if it were a strange note in that tune. And he says, yeah. And so, anonymous man, you've become part of my listening. Your romance, a romance lost in the past. And a reminder somehow that each member of that trio has died since then. And maybe so have you. And sadly, maybe she. It's really sweet, isn't it?
It's really brilliant. Lovely. I tell you, it makes me think, there's two things. Because I tweeted about this the other day, and somebody said, oh, I've been listening to that record for 35 years, and I hate that man. And I think, no, forget it. Just enjoy that. That's part of a lost world.
So you know, can you hear Bill Evans reacting to this? You can.
No. He just plays, and they're fine. Yeah. Hey, it's not particularly intrusive at all. It's just, the interesting thing is they haven't mixed it out. They haven't taken it out.
Yeah.
It's just part of the kind of part of the ambience of the time. And I tell you what, also, you know, they always say that the best canned laughter was laughed in the 1950s by audiences to the Lucy.
It's the Lucy show. Yes.
Because the 1950s laughter had a different quality to it. Probably post-war laughter. You know, it's not sniggering. It's it's barking with laughter.
Yeah.
And so they still use this stuff in canned laughter nowadays. So if you were watching, I don't know. Oh, I certainly used it until not that long ago. So if you're watching an old episode of Friends. The laughter you are hearing in response to a joke by Chandler is people laughing who are dead.
Wow. Years beforehand. Isn't it the same with the, what's the famous scream that you hear in horror films?
God, yes, that's going to, we're going to have to get.
Heinrich scream.
It's called a Wilhelm scream.
Wilhelm scream, that's it, the Wilhelm scream. And
go on, tell us more. I can't remember.
Well, remember is there was a movie, and I can't remember what it was the 40s or 50s. It was generally considered to be the most blood-curdling shriek by this girl actor. And everyone thought it was so convincing that they would sample it and use it in subsequent films because it was just the best scream imaginable.
And that's basically what happened with music. People do the same thing with John Bonham, don't they?
They do.
That's the loudest drum sound ever recorded. We'll just use that one. We'll sample it forevermore.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.